So I've got a question for all the video game lovers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance, so I'd visit alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
Retronauts is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. Find us and more great shows at podcast.hyperx.com.
This week on Retronauts Wars, Wars Never's Changes is... Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey. Today, we're talking about Advance Wars, a very long-running series that was supposed to have a remake around this time, but something happened. That thing was actually a real war. So eventually, we're going to get this remake at some point. But for now, we're going to talk about the 20 years worth of Advance Wars games. And yes, the series is kind of stuck with that clumsy name because the first ones we got were on the Game Boy Advance, and they're named after the platforms they're on. Before I continue, who is here with me in the same room, as usual?
Henry Gilbert, activating his CEO power of internet pedantry.
Excellent, excellent. And who do we have on the line? Our special guest.
Chris Daniel.
That's right.
I don't have anything clever to say.
Now, usually I only like Chris on this podcast every 18 months to 2 years, but he is the one person in my life.
Only on the pay feed.
Exactly. Only on the pay feed. But he is the one person in my life who is as big of an Advance Wars freak as Henry Gilbert over here.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And I was talking to Henry before the recording, and I think this is true of you, Chris. You're both also Picross freaks. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. I have to stop playing that because when I start one up, I get addicted, and the next, you know, half a year, I can't do anything but play it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this and Picross appeal to the same mindset, which is not me, and we'll talk about that soon. But yes, we're going to be talking about Advance Wars today. And before I continue, I want to know what everyone's expertise and experience with this series is. Let's start with Chris, our special guest. Chris, what is your Advance Wars experience?
Well, I just have the American experience. I played all the actual Advanced Wars series, you know, starting with the first one in GBA, going all the way up to Days of Ruin, and even replaying the European version of Days of Ruin, Dark Conflict. And I beat all of them except for Days of Ruin, which the last level on that is beyond sadistic.
Yep. That's how I felt too. Yeah. Not to copy Chris too much here, but yes, that was I had a Game Boy Advance at launch, and I was liking it okay. Like I was playing Fire Pro Wrestling a lot, and then around my birthday in September of 2001, there was a 9 out of 9 review, 9.9 out of 10 review of it on IGN. This game I never heard of, and I put a lot of stock into the IGN review score then, especially because pretty much nothing broke 9.5, especially in the Nintendo stuff. And so I thought, what is this? What could this possibly be? And I and when I played it, yeah, it clicked all the right buttons for me. Like it was the top down tactics and turn basedness, and just the style, the COs, the character writing, like so much of it really spoke to me. And I also liked that it was a lesser Nintendo series. I always root for the underdogs and these kind of things. And so, yeah, it really got me. And I played every game and then a lot of games that were just like, oh, we're making this game, like, say, War Groove or War Bits. because Nintendo doesn't make Advance Wars games anymore. So we're a plucky indie dev will just copy it and do a pretty fine job of it in the case of those two games I just said.
And then Nintendo said, we'll show you.
Yep, we'll show
you. Make a game and then not release it.
Yeah, but we'll only hire Canadians to do it, though.
Hey,
yep.
They do good work.
Oh, do they ever? Yeah, especially Next Level.
And the tax breaks. Yes.
That too. Hey, Vancouverites, you guys rule. I'll be one of you soon. As for me, I bought this game on its release date. So by this game, I mean the first Advance Wars. We'll talk about that release date very soon on this podcast. It's a fun day for us all. But yeah, I got it because of the kind glowing reviews. There was not a lot happening on the Game Boy Advance at the time. It was kind of like a disappointing first few months for that system. And it seemed perfect for me because I love strategy RPGs. I love turn-based stuff. But I'll tell you what, guys, we'll talk more about this. I am absolute dog shit at this game. For this podcast, I just to refresh myself on the game and the rules, I decided I'll just go through all the tutorial missions on the first Advance Wars, not really knowing or not remembering that there's like 3 to 4 hours worth of them. So by like the second to last one, it did get too difficult for me. I did not grow or get any smarter over the past 20 years. In fact, I probably got stupider. But yeah, this game series, not for me. I respect it immensely, but there's something about the puzzle qualities of this game that my brain just can't interface with. And maybe we'll figure that out. Maybe we'll figure out what's wrong with me through this podcast. Maybe you guys don't have the problem. It could be me.
Maybe you're the sicko, not us. Yeah. No, it's funny you mentioned that. When I never thought of it as like a puzzle type game before. I thought of it as just, you know, a strategy type game. But when you mentioned that, it's like, yeah, there definitely is some, you know, puzzleness to it of like they present you with a thing that only has so many solutions, like usually right. Only like 3 or 4 true paths to do it. It is also why, like, you know, if you had a game fact for it, it was very helpful because they actually could just say, now in turn 2, move this person here and that person there. Like, there was a recipe to do it right and get the best score.
I think that's what made this game, like, the scales fell from my eyes or something, because I was like, why don't I get this game? And then I saw a strategy guide at the store and I flipped through it, and it's basically, a turn-by-turn analysis of, like, do this on this turn, do that on that turn. And it felt to me like the solutions in this game in the series are too prescriptive for me, and I'm a free thinker, man. I like to think outside the box. So I think I'm not a fan of like the solve for X kind of strategy games, which I feel like this is, which that's not a detriment to the game. That's just my own preference, really.
See, now I disagree. I don't think this is much a puzzle game. I think this is an engineering game, kind of like Factorio or Space Chem. You have a lot of freedom to make your own solution. Yes, there are prescriptive solutions that will work, but you can come up with your own ideas. It's just that, like real programming and engineering, there is lots of different fail scenarios, and you have to be mindful of every single last one to, you know, keep the enemy on the back foot.
We should point out that Chris has a computer science degree, so it feels like this game is made for you, Chris.
I do love about the game that it is kind of constant math. Like, you're just like, hey, well, I have 15,000, not just, you know, it's budgeting, because it's like, okay, I start this round with 15,000. Do I build 2 medium tanks, or do I spend it all on that 1 big tank? Or do I want to flood the field with infantry people who will, you know, act as choke points for my aggressors and can also take over things, but will probably fall quickly? And then on top of that, you also think like, just doing a matchup of like, okay, I have a 10-unit enemy here, and I'm going to shoot them with my 10-unit, and that says 70%, so they'll be left with 3. Oh. Then I can use my 7 against the 3, because the 7 will kill all of the 3s, and then next comes my 8.
Many variables. It's why I prefer Fire Emblem, but I'm still not a huge fan of that. Before we go on, though, we'll talk more about the rules of Fire Emblem soon. I don't want to talk about who makes it, and that's Intelligent Systems. So I learned a lot about them by doing research for this podcast. I guess I didn't really know too much about them to begin with, because we know them best for Paper Mario series, Fire Emblem, Advance Wars, in the popular Mo series on the 3DS, which, hey, don't overlook these puzzle games. They're fun, too. There's Pushmo, Crashmo, Pushmo World on Wii U, and I just realized there's a new one called Stretchmo, which I downloaded last night.
Oh, I never played Stretch. I haven't had the Stretch. I love all those Mo games.
There's a hidden Mo game.
Oh, man.
On the 3DS.
Now, Intelligent Systems is secretly, like, one of my favorite developers. Like, everything you list are like my favorite games I played. Also Panel to Pawn, and one of my favorite times I ever had at the Electronic Expo, the Entertainment Electronic Entertainment Expo, was for a game that nobody cares about anymore, and I understand why, Codename Steam, which I did actually like that game.
That was them trying to make a new IP.
Yes, for Americans,
with public domain Americana figures.
Yes, yeah. Though it had the bad luck of coming out right in late 2014 with Adam Baldwin as the main voice actor in it. But I liked that game. But when they presented that game, I felt like the only journalist there who gave a single shit, because it was like, if you're invited to, we're going to debut a brand new Nintendo IP right here at E3 special event. I feel like everyone else in that room was so crestfallen, like, what the hell is this? But the second I saw the Intelligent Systems logo up there, and that's when I met, like, I got to meet the guy who created Panel to Pawn and chat with, like, this white Russian guy who worked at Intelligent Systems in Kyoto, who I was like, wow, how did you become a game director there? Like, you have to be really good. But anyway, I got to gush directly to the Intelligent Systems people at that E3 of 2014 and be like, you guys are great. I love all your games. Thank you.
What a bizarre game that is, Codename Steam.
Yeah.
No one seemed to like it. I think it was also too hard for its own good,
yeah,
from what little I played of it.
I was probably the highest reviewer of it on Metacritic of, like, real reviewers. But,
so that's one IP I forgot about that was just a dead end for them.
I mean, it's worth not mentioning.
Yeah, hey, I forgot about it. So, you know, I'm sure it's like $5 somewhere. So check it out if you want to. But yeah, Intelligent Systems, founded in 1983. They're an auxiliary studio for Nintendo, similar to HAL. So they had a hand in developing some of the earliest Famicom games, porting a lot of the arcade games to the Famicom, and also porting Famicom Disk System games to the cartridge format, like Kid Icarus and Metroid. Intelligent Systems is helping make those into cartridge games, eliminating a lot of the Disk System features and, you know, other things, and adding new functionality for the cartridge.
Sounds like, you know, they have a similar arc to, like, Treyarch or these Activision's, like, port houses who then became actual developers in their own right.
It took a bit of time, though. So they're also credited with doing boring but important work, like creating development hardware. They're responsible for the DS development hardware. But basically, before developing their own series like Advance Wars and Fire Emblem, they were the shadow co-developer on a ton of your favorite Nintendo games, and would continue to co-develop on series like WarioWare. So, like, Intelligent Systems, their names are attached to big important games like Super Metroid. Like, a lot of supplementary development went through them. And go back to our Kid Icarus episode, like, they were sent the design doc for Kid Icarus, and what came back wasn't very good, because the guy designing it was the first time he designed a game. So Kid Icarus was done in-house in an incredibly short amount of time, because Intelligent Systems really couldn't make the game the original game that the director wanted.
This is a real insider Games Press thing, but I also I learned that they did internal development stuff for developers, because when I worked in the Games Press and we were given, like, here's your capture station for getting, you know, screenshots and gameplay off of a DS game officially from Nintendo that had to be under, like, lock and key, on the side of it was the Intelligent Systems logo, because they built the capture machine.
I guess I never looked at the side of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So 1988 gives us our first IP that Intelligent Systems created, which was Advance Wars, and then 1990 gave us the first Fire Emblem game, although these are both co-developed with Nintendo R&D1 because they don't have, like, artists and musicians and other roles that Nintendo does have that they can help out with.
I think that's why for the longest time I thought they were one in the same, Intelligent Systems and R&D1, because their early games were so... I was like, oh, R&D1 became Intelligent Systems, right? Like, no, and they're not R&D2 either. It's complicated in these old informal days of game development.
And, you know, records are spotty at best from this time, but it seems like 1992 was the first year they were able to develop their own game in their own series. So it seems like the first game they developed on their own was Fire Emblem Gaiden. That was later remade in 2017 for the 3DS, when they were just doing a ton of Fire Emblem games that were kind of being forgotten about after, between Awakening and, like, Three Houses.
Yes. Yeah.
Or sorry, between the three-part Fire Emblem 3DS game and then Three Houses, there was, like, a few remakes in there.
Yeah, the Gaiden one, that remake of it is memorable to me because it was one of the last games I got to, like, preview before we became full-time podcasters, me and you, Bob. And, yeah, it was such a weird late 3DS game where they seemingly they wanted a new Fire Emblem, and they decided, well, why don't we just remake the one that had our first ever romancing option, though it was really just between, you have your main character, Dale, pick a wife, and then in the next chapter, their child will be the star of it, and that will, that choice will change their like stats and some other stuff, which that was sort of how in Awakening they justified having romance. They're like, well, this isn't brand new to Fire Emblem. We did it in this Gaiden game. So then it was kind of like closing the loop to then remake the original romance Gaiden. But it was weird as hell. I think I have the super fancy collector's edition sitting around there somewhere.
Well, Awakening is the secret villain of this podcast because Awakening put a bullet in Advance Wars' head.
What a horrible thing. Yeah, that one of my favorite games killed one of my other favorite games just through success, as to quote Bane, victory defeated you about Advance Wars.
I'll take your word for it. And it seems like the first Advance...
I'm not a Fire Emblem fan, so I could just be better.
Okay.
It's easier for me.
You know what? I want to like Fire Emblem, and I just need to set aside time to play one of the like eight games that came out in the past decade.
Well, just, you got to get into shipping. That's what I learned. You know, you got to pick your favorites and who you want to kiss the other one. And, and of course, it can only be straight, except for like two instances.
Unless you've got a potion. Yeah. And I hope to God you do. And it seems to me...
Marry the little girl because she's a 9,000-year-old dragon.
Is that how it happens in this game, too?
There are some 9,000-year-old dragons in it, yes. Look, I never touch those dragons, everybody. I leave those dragons alone.
You know, you'll get that. You'll get that. And, you know, also things are a little fuzzy with history, but it seems like the first Advance Wars games, the first Advance Wars game they developed was the Super Nintendo game, which was a remake of the first Famicom game. We'll talk about it. Chris, we've been yakking on here. Any Intelligent Systems thoughts or ideas? Do you like their games? Are you a fan of their games?
I mean, I like the Advance Wars series, but, you know, Fire Emblem just never really clicked with me. I think I got really scared off by the permadeath system. It makes it so any but the most perfect win is invalid. And I know they scaled back on that, but I never went back to it because, you know, those games are a huge time investment, and there are so many great games coming out nowadays that it's hard for me to, you know, want to stick my time into that personally.
I think a secret thing about their games is that they are, well, maybe it's not so secret, they're just very, very punishing, but they have a very friendly exterior. Like, the Pushmo, Crashmo games, they're about like a cuddly fat sumo who pulls on blocks. They get punishingly hard very, very quickly. Like, yes. Intelligent Systems are a bunch of brain lords who want to punish you.
They are secretly the meanest of Nintendo developers, but that's also what... Paper Mario, I love their approach to Paper Mario, but I feel like the last time Intelligent Systems got to really wild out on Paper Mario was Thousand Year Door. Then everyone after that was when I like to imagine Miyamoto himself said, you nerds made this too hard. You got to soften this shit up.
What's with all these numbers?
Yeah.
Let's make them smaller, give them some stickers.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
I love Thousand Year Door.
It's great.
It is just a great game.
I'm lobbying. It's been now 18 years. You had your fun. You had your stickers. You had your color splashes. You had your Super Paper Mario. Let's go back to basics.
Yeah.
Mario and Luigi, that RPG series is dead.
Yep. Yeah.
We don't get
the
big numbers
everybody.
Anymore. They fired. Well, everyone's just gone now, yeah. And they're cast to the wind. But it's time for another Thousand Year Door. I agree with you, Chris and Henry. Let's talk about the basics of Advance Wars. We talked about it a bit up front. I want to go into like the rules of this very complex game. But in a nutshell, here is why people like it. So Advance Wars, in a very cute way, portrays the worst actions of humanity. There's a toy-like anime aesthetic, very different than the serious, grim, hex-based war games out there for like the PC. There are so many of these. They're lesser now, but they used to be a much bigger thing on the PCs, things you could only play on the PC. And the roots of this series is basically, there's nothing on the record about this, but I assume like a lot of console games from the era, let's take this harder experience and make it into a simple console game, like Dragon quests and other things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see the extension of how, you know, Wizardry became Dragon Quest, and it was the hardest of hardcore otaku who were into that then translated it to a more colorful and friendly thing that could work on the most popular gaming system in the 80s in Japan, the Famicom. And the same, I could expect the same roots for Famicom Wars, especially as we all know through like guys like Hideo Kojima, military otaku is a very real thing, mm-hmm. especially in Japan. Like, and I mean, there's that in America too, but it seems the crossover of mega nerds who also love military stuff but can't own guns, that's I think an important key part of it.
When your military isn't invading other countries and isn't allowed to, it's more like fantasy. Like, what if there was an army?
Yeah, that's true.
What if there were battles?
That's what if the self-defense force finally got a little more aggressive? Yeah.
But yeah, it's a turn-based strategy game with no real RPG elements, although they add a few lighter ones later in the series. There's no hero units. Any sort of resource you accumulate is gone after each mission. And like I said up front, to me at least, it's more of a puzzle game, especially from Advance Wars on, when they give you like a predetermined loadout of units. It's sort of, and then you can eventually build more. But in those early stages, it's like, use these tools to finish this puzzle. And that's all you're getting.
Yeah, it's like, you have this much money, you have these spaces, like, and how do you, you do have to plan, like, you know, many moves ahead, you have to think about that. Like, it is kind of like chess, the ultimate war game as well, of just like, here's, you have all these squares, move your characters here.
And I consider this chess 2.
Chess 2.
It's the much improved sequel. Yeah, like, in the earlier games, and we'll talk about those, in the Game Boy, Famicom, and Super Nintendo games, you don't start with units. You have to start by building units. So it's a much different way of doing things than Advance Onwards, in which you start with predetermined amounts of units, and then sometimes you can build them in later missions.
Well, actually, in most Advance Wars, most of it you have built in. Some levels do start you out with predetermined armies, but most levels actually force you to build.
Mm.
For story purposes, some start you with, like, some of my favorite stories start you with, oh man, for story reasons, there's only 5 units left. You need to start building back up or go capture that base and we'll defend here. Just get in the mountains and defend. Like, there's that, they tell some good stories using these very simple just squares and like on the Game Boy, like 16-bit imagery to express these things. Yeah.
And despite the like primitive graphics, like you said, Henry, primitive is a slanderous word. I think like purposefully cartoony, purposely colorful. It's way more complex than it looks. So we said this up front. There are so many variables to account for on any given map, including terrain, and all the units interact with each other in different ways. They have various strengths and weaknesses. I pulled up the instruction booklet on my Wii U gamepad.
All right,
because I downloaded this for the Wii U, and it has like an entire chart of like all of the units and all of their like different affinities towards each other. It just, looking at that just shows you how complex this game is. It's like, okay, if I move this unit, what can move near it? What can fire near it? Will it bring me to the path of anything that can come towards me? There are so many things to think about, overwhelming to someone like me who is not in this kind of mindset.
I mean, it's hard than that, because even to move the unit, you have to determine what type of terrain it's going over and how quickly it can move over that specific terrain.
That too, yeah. Like, different like units with wheels can move over roads faster. You know, only little people can move over mountains. There are just so many things to consider for both your units and your enemies. Units as well.
Yeah, it's I mean, if you start with Fire Emblem and then go to Advance Wars, like, you can, I do think there's a transitive property, because, you know, Fire Emblem has the classic, you know, the triangle they love of like swords beat axes, axes beat lances, lances beat swords. I might actually have that wrong, but
see, I have a problem keeping that straight, which is why I'm bad at Advance Wars.
But in Advance Wars, it is far more complex. But I've played it so much, like, this, as soon as I turned back on a copy of one in preparation of this, I was like, right, okay, so of course I'm gonna have my mechanized infantry getting the front lines, blast their bazookas at the tanks. Oh, there's an anti-air, which is going to go straight through my infantry guys, but that's why I got the tank right behind them. Tanks destroy anti-infantry. And I remembered the ranges of all of the missile launchers and whatnot, or artillery versus missile launchers. Like, yeah, it was, And it only is through pure memorization of hundreds of hours of gameplay, for sure.
That's what screwed me up. It's like, oh, this is the truck that fires at things in the air, not at things on the ground. I just lost this mission because I moved it here. Whoops.
I mean, it's obvious. Missiles go after air targets. Rockets go after ground targets. This is obvious.
You only have to hit R over the unit and then page through a bunch of information to see. It's very complicated. And you know what? Looking at videos on these games from Advance Wars fans, they also agree. They're not just like, oh, you have to get good. They're actually pretty reasonable. No, a lot of, like, most of the fans I was looking at online, they agree, like, these are difficult games. This is a very small numbers game. It's sort of like the rich get richer and the poor get poorer kind of game design, in which if you lose HP on a unit, that unit can no longer do as much damage because the HP is basically the amount of units represented in that little icon. So It really encourages you, especially with Advance Wars Onwards, to be on the offense, be very aggressive. I also don't like playing like that. I'm more of like a turtly base building kind of guy, but you have to be on the offense completely because when you attack your enemy, you make the first move. Like, if you get the first attack, you can definitely whittle down their hit points and make their next attacks weaker.
Mm-hmm. No,
also, you get to determine how the triangle is being manipulated. You don't have the enemies using the triangle against you.
Mm-hmm. That too, yeah.
It's more than just one triangle with this game. It's triangles within triangles.
If you put your character in position first, then it determines how they're going to have to do it. Yeah, and it's, there is so much complexity to it. And also, like, there are things in Advance Wars that I definitely would say, oh, this is too complex. Like, they ramp up the difficulty sometimes way too much. Also, there are hard modes in every game, which, like, even in the first game, I think
Days of Ruin. But
okay.
Yeah, I saw that about Days of Ruin. People were mad there wasn't a hard mode, and I was like, aren't these games hard enough?
I only played hard mode in the first one and got to, like, Chapter 4, and by that point, I think I then was looking up a fact of, like, all right, what's each move? And then I told myself, what am I doing? Why am I, like, I'm not even playing it then at this point.
You're just kind of, like, doing programming at that point.
Yes.
You're putting in different lines of code.
Loot drop incoming. Get to the drop at HyperX.com for store-wide savings. It seems like everything these days is getting more expensive, and HyperX is doing its part to fight the battle with deep discounts across all categories of HyperX gear. Head there quick, though. Once March ends, so does the madness. It's the HyperX Loot Drop 2, going on now at HyperX.com.
Yeah, difficult game. These games always had a bit of personality. Like, the gimmick was always, like, cutesy colorful war, the orange star versus the blue moon, and, you know, their
red star
antics.
Originally, but then when it came to America, orange star.
Yes, when
the... Anyone confused about which faction is the communist.
When the wall fell, it became orange star.
I also, you know, when I think about it being too hard or bits that are too hard, it's... All you learn all these rules for land, and then they're like, okay, now it's sky rules, so you got to put that in your brain too, which is a whole other thing. And then it's like, all right, and now water, and there's a lot, like, a submarine can go underwater, but for only so long, and it will let you forget that, like, it ran out of gas and everybody died on that submarine. You should have been watching your gas intake.
Yeah, you need to refuel things. Yes, you need to resupply people with ammo. This game is so complex. And like I said about the personality, yeah, it always had cutesy personality, but with the Advance games onwards, it really, like, doubled down on it, because with the first Advance Wars games, they were trying to appeal to kids, which is very funny to me.
Yes.
With how difficult these games are. But yeah, this is when, this is not the introduction of CO powers, it's when they really figure out what those are supposed to be. There's a ton of story, a ton of text. The story is very, very anime. Spoilers, the end of the first game is about an evil clone, which is very weird. Totally out of nowhere.
So many clones.
It follows the Fire Emblem style too, which I believe they kind of borrow from Legend of the Galactic Heroes, which was a very popular book series and then anime series in the 80s in Japan. But it is like, oh, there's, you know, here's you and your real and your enemy. And, you know, you kind of respect your rival, and then you find out, wait, there was a third enemy that was the Black Whatever group, and you have to fight usually the Black Hole Army. And it's like, okay, they were pulling the strings the whole time. Let's work together and attack the true enemy. That's usually where it goes.
It's very shonen.
Definitely, definitely. And it's funny to think that after 20 years of like just being adjacent to warfare, not directly, of course, but being an American,
yes.
When this game came out in 2001, I wasn't thinking that much about it. 20 years later, I'm like, this game is kind of weird, where these are all like real little people on your force, and you have the nice blonde lady saying, use the infantry to lure out tanks.
Yes, yeah.
It's like, just have them be like human targets so I can attack this tank. It's just like, this is kind of weird, and now I'm like, can they just be robots or something? But yeah,
we'll never know where that missile launcher is unless you put that tank there to get blown up by it. Like, yes,
it does feel like it definitely was made by a country who has not been to war in a long time.
Well, and I mean, yes, I will also say, playing it now, I was a person at the time of this recording. I don't know when Reboot Camp will come out. I was disappointed when it got delayed. I absolutely understood why. But then when I was playing this after it got delayed and I was explaining what I was doing to my when playing the game to my husband, I was like, so of course now I've captured this city and now I'm going to shoot my rocket launchers at those people and blow them up. I was like, I guess that does sound bad now, even though it was always like resembling war crimes and horrible invasions and all that. And it always was.
Yeah, it just came out. Advance Wars came out at peak time of neoliberals' understand of war, where the populace is very separate from the actual consequences.
All those buildings are empty.
Yeah, and if we did blow up a hospital, whoopsie-doo on us, you know?
We stumbled into war once again.
The referee said we didn't commit a war crime. And is he our referee? You know, that's beside the point.
This is where I want you guys to gush about just the basics of Advance Wars. I mean, we've done a lot of it so far. This, again, I don't want to make anyone mad by them thinking I don't like this game. I have an immense amount of respect for this game. It's totally not for me. And going back into it, I was like, wow, I'm just very impressed on an intellectual level by how complex this game is and also what it demands from you. I want both you guys to talk about anything I might have neglected.
Talk about how complex it is when you realize this is extremely watered down from like hardcore PC war games.
I also couldn't handle those.
Talking about how they didn't want to release the first Advance Wars because they thought Americans don't care about this complex, you know, hard games. And it's like, you haven't seen the PC market. Those people are crazy. I mean, Hearts of Iron or Unity of Command makes this look like a cakewalk.
Absolutely. And I'm sure the people, if we have any fans of those games listening, they're probably furious at all of us right now.
Yes, yeah. No, but me and Chris,
you could have your baby game. Oh, it's hard.
Me and Chris
are
children.
Really hard World War II.
Yes, yeah. I
couldn't revert to an old save in World War II.
No, there's just something about the game that, like, it just, I mean, it's so relaxing to me, really. I think, too, the perfect combo to me was, I would replay the campaign some, but honestly, for me, especially for Dual Strike, the campaign was the warm up to War Room and just playing whatever map I felt like or unlocking more stuff and just repeating some of my favorite maps, but then trying it with a different CO or, you know, different strategies, and also like finding my favorite COs, but then challenging myself to, you know, use different ones who had qualities that I was like, oh, that's not really how I play, but I guess I should try with that. But and there's just something so relaxing to me of like having that system in my hand. I'm playing it. I got earphones in. I'm listening to 2007 podcasts in my ear and just just chilling.
What if I was on these podcasts?
Just for the uninitiated, CO means command and officer. That's your general in charge of your troops.
Mm-hmm.
They have powers which affect the rest of the units.
And Chris, I don't know who your favorite is. My favorite across all games, because she's from Advance Wars onward, is she's Sammy in the English version, I think Domino in some other ones, but she is the girl on the Orange Star, because she is very infantry focused. I really love infantry. You get more bang for your buck in those. Like, they're either 1,000 or 3,000, and especially hers can capture very quickly. They have enhanced capture abilities, and they have extra movement, and her CO superpower even enhances that movement and capture stuff. You could capture a capital in one turn and end it if you time your superpowers right and just defend an infantry person in their walk up to the capital. Then you use your CO power there. Boom, capture one turn.
Henry's encouraging all of us to storm the capital. Yeah. It's a strategy.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, Sammy is the one that I played as in the little progress I made in this game. Chris, do you have any favorite COs?
Yeah, I remember before, Bob, you mentioned that this game doesn't allow turtling. I disagree. If you get grit, you can turtle like heck because that guy's power is range. All of his artillery units have extra range, and if you get the powers, your CO power, your super CO power, your range gets crazy huge, and you can just create defensive choke points where you're just annihilating their back line like nothing else.
His AI is one of the hardest to play against in the game for me. Like, he'd always mess me up, man.
I'd actually think his AI is pretty weak because it doesn't really take advantage of the extra range. I mean, it'll take targets of opportunity, but it doesn't place guys in optimal positions.
Hmm. Sure. Okay. I agree with that.
If I can make it past the tutorial this time, I will try to play as Grit.
And
I mean, unfortunately, in the campaign, you don't really get a lot of control over who you play as most of the time.
And another of my favorites who only unlocked as a CO, a special secret CO in 2, and I believe then in Dual Strike as well, is Hachi, the old Japanese guy who runs the War Room store, who sells you the maps. He is unlockable, and his power is just things are cheaper. Like, he is really good at just selling you cheaper stuff, and so because he's the merchant in the game, I like playing with him a lot. Also, I just like his style. That definitely he is supposed to be a child of World War II. That's his character model, like a Japanese kid who grew up in World War II.
That's what I read from it. Yeah,
yeah, but he's. I guess, too, part of the fun is the challenge of reading, like, oh, what nationality is this coded to? I mean, they're very in your face about it, but,
yeah.
But it's like what they, for example, with the Yellow Star Army, which is the Japanese group, the two...
Yellow Comet.
Oh, Yellow Comet, right, yeah. It's interesting, the two lead COs in it, because there's Kanbei, who is, you know, a very, like, gung-ho samurai type, who his thing is, like, his stuff's more expensive, but he's more powerful, too. So it's like, it almost feels like Japanese developers are talking about the stereotype of, well, yeah, Japanese electronics are more expensive, but they're pretty great, you know? And then, his daughter, Sonja... she is more about, like, she's a pretty good defensive one in that you never know. It really challenges you when you're facing her to memorize it because, you know, unit health is displayed on the map for all your enemies, but not hers. That one they keep from you.
Okay.
So if you don't remember, like, oh, wait, that one was 8. Oh, crap, I'm going to lose here.
More variables to think about.
Yes, yeah.
Before we go on any further with talking about, like, the intricacies of the games, I want to talk about each game and what they add to the series. So let's start off with the first game, and that was Famicom Wars, which was released in 1988, guess what, guys, for the Famicom. And these are all online, these commercials for the series, but there is a recurring series of commercials in which a lot of non-Japanese actors are doing the basically, I don't know, but I've been told kind of army chant, but doing it basically like in phonetic Japanese, talking about, you know, Advanced Wars.
Those are fun.
Yeah.
I do like those commercials. I mean, too, it's like, so it's a bunch of seemingly American actors hired to act out as American infantry people, but for a commercial in Japanese that will only be seen in the Japanese markets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such a funny construction for a commercial.
And I think the cover to this game is very homoerotic. It's just a bunch of buff, sweaty men just grinning at you. No other cover would look like this, but it's very much like a realistic, like a photo of men just like sweaty and glistening and grinning at you. It's an interesting cover.
What a funny way to sell. Yeah, not stylized in the slightest. It's just like, yeah, these are the men that what's on screen is going to represent to you when you play this game. Yeah,
they're gonna live, they're gonna die. Yeah. They're gonna
That's
love
before they discovered the chibi art style for the game series.
Yeah, I guess
it was realistic, just not very moving.
I guess out of necessity it was chibi, but they would eventually make that their like mission statement for these games. So yeah, this game, what it establishes is the slightly cartoony aesthetic, We have the Red Star, the Blue Moon factions, little cutscenes during fights.
Orange Star.
Oh, it's Orange Star.
Sorry, Red Star. Dang it, I got it mixed up.
It is Red Star until Advance Wars. So it's Red Star, Blue Moon. Then we have like the cutscenes that happen during fights and occupations and building units and stuff. They figure out all of the grammar of Advance Wars, basically, in this first game.
Yeah, you know, with that cover and the cartoony graphics, it feels to me more of the era of like almost pre-Famicom era games that have, you know, like Adventure or Pitfall that are so abstract and simple only through, you know, the limitations that then they say like, oh, but if you look at the cover, this is what you're supposed to be imagining. And so
we can't make the graphics too representational yet.
And then they learn later, like, no, people actually like this. Like that's a style, not the limitations. It's actually a choice afterwards. Yeah.
I'm glad the game is not that realistic in terms of graphics.
No, that's, I mean, we'll get to Days of Ruin, but that's one of their choices then.
This is an older
game. The graphics in the first game are kind of limitation because when a unit is over a piece of terrain, they can only draw the unit and not the terrain behind them.
Mm.
So you have to kind of either hover over to see the stats or just memorize what was there.
Okay, I didn't think about that limitation, yeah.
Yeah, the tech, I guess this is like mid-NES to get even that much out of maps and stuff. It's impressive for the time.
And because it's an older game, there's no concern for like onboarding the player. Like Advance Wars Onwards is all about, let's walk you through every kind of thing you'll be doing. In this game, it's more of a toy box idea where it's just like, we're going to kind of give you everything up front and you'll play with it and figure it out, which is just how games worked at the time, but it's not very friendly to newcomers. Honestly, everything before Advance Wars, really just play it out of curiosity. The Advance Wars is really where you should start. It's where the game was modernized, and even that was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too.
And yeah, co-developed by Nintendo R&D 1, which is why Hip Tanaka does the music, the guy who did music for Metroid and Kid Icarus and all your favorites, that weirdo. And what they establish here will go on to be the basis for future games. But again, it's not very user friendly. And but you will see maps from this game used throughout future Wars games. So there are like famous maps from this game. I didn't know that there were like favorite maps from the series, but Henry is pointing out like, oh yeah, they reuse them in the War Room mode in the future games.
Yeah, I was showing my husband that too, of like, oh, in Dual Strike, these are always my favorite maps. I play this map in every one of them. But I didn't realize probably some of my favorite very simple maps would likely go back to the very first game. And maybe that's why it also appeals to me, because it's the layout is very simple and it is based on before they had too many rules about, you know, flight or water that annoy me sometimes, because even I forget those. I'm like, right, the beach. Darn it. I didn't get on the beach correctly.
Yeah, the other limitation with the original NES game is apparently the turns would take very long because the AI was kind of slow on the limited hardware.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue with the Game Boy games. We also never got to the point where the second Game Boy game is basically just a remake of the first one with better AI, where it's like, you don't have to wait as long this time. But yeah, that was
so
a problem.
It's really just a patch. Like
pretty much. Like a 3,000 yen patch that you're buying in a box.
Yeah. Less time waiting and less colors. All the more you want.
Exactly. Let's move on to the Game Boy games, actually. So when starting research for this podcast, I was like, what are there, like five Advance Wars games? Easy schmeasy. No, there's four Game Boy Advance Wars games. So Game Boy, comma, Advance Wars games, not Game Boy Advance Wars games.
Right.
Sorry.
Right. Yeah. No, it's
they're all
it's
Game Boy Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one is Game Boy Wars. It's Famicom Wars on the Game Boy, or so you would think, because for whatever reason, they decided to use a hex-based approach, although these are not hexagons, which muddies the water a bit. Instead, they're squares that overlap in a hexagon-style way.
That's very
confusing.
It
looks very clumsy, and it's kind of confusing to see, like, with the tiles, it's easy to see where you can go and what things overlap. With this hexagon-based approach that aren't hexagons, it's a lot more visually indistinct.
Though, reading your notes, but that it added Fog of War is very interesting. Like, that is a really cool dynamic that I wouldn't want in every map, but when it's a Fog of War map, I'm like, ooh, that's fun. Like, it really, especially in the Advance Wars games entries, the Fog of War challenges you on that aggressiveness, because it's like, well, how much of a risk do you want to take? And if you try to walk in a spot where another enemy is, you just stop. You get, you know, like an exclamation point. You go, bleep, and it goes, oh, no. And you just lost that turn. That character can't, your army unit can't shoot whoever they ran into. They're just stopped and screwed.
I hate Fog of War in every game. I don't like it.
I'm not particularly a fan of it myself, because you can never tell how much the AI's cheating in that situation.
Yeah, they know more than you.
Access to your location.
That's true. Okay, yes, I remember a fair share of those where I was like, you have to be, you're looking at my battleship board here. You snuck a peek.
But yeah, that is one of the things the Game Boy Wars series introduces into the Wars series as a whole. We talked about it earlier, but yeah, there was a sequel to Game Boy Wars called Game Boy Wars Turbo, which is just what it sounds like, although this is where Hudson takes over development. So Hudson develops this one. It boasts an improved AI. You don't have to wait as long between turns. There's 50 new maps, Super Game Boy support. It's basically what I call the under new management version of Game Boy Wars. Like, hey, we fix things. The menu's different.
That's, yeah, learning that these Game Boy games were handed over to Hudson is really interesting to me, because yeah, Hudson is like a it's almost a second party developer for Nintendo at times. Like,
and I believe they were the Mario Party developer until the last one, for whatever reason. They're not doing it anymore.
Well, and the Mario, I do believe the if you look up who the developer of the last Mario Party games are, the descriptions I've read about them is like, oh, it's just all the, they hired all the Hudson guys and just put them in a new place.
Some place like, called Schmudson develops the Mario Party games.
But that Hex stuff, like, that really is, like, that definitely feels like it comes from their Military Madness games, which, when I was at my most super into Advance Wars and jonesing for it because there hadn't been one in 2 whole years. I can't believe I've had to wait 2 years. I hear about that Military Madness got a remake on Xbox and other places.
That's right.
And yeah, when I played it, I was like, man, this is just too, I was too much of a baby for it. Like, it was, and also it wasn't cute. It wasn't colorful. It wasn't cute. It's in outer space, and it's just, you know, a lot of white and black. Like, no. Where's the colors?
Yeah, I mean, Military Madness is a footnote in the history of Advance Wars, because it was developed for the PC Engine in 1989. Advance Wars 1 is 88, so it's between Advance Wars and Fire Emblem. And Nectaris, as it was called in Japan, was much bigger in Japan. And I guess they trusted Hudson, because they're like, oh, you guys made a hex-based strategy game. For some reason, we made the Game Boy version of the hex-based. Can you take over? And they're like, okay.
We're not making TurboGrafx games anymore, so I guess, yeah, let's do it.
With the hex-based, there's actually a good reason to make strategy games hex-based, because it's more fair, because you don't have these issues with corners. Because in square based, you have to worry about how guys fight on the corners, and you can pack less guys in. It's the movement is less realistic, because moving diagonal takes substantially longer than moving. Moving diagonal takes exactly as long as moving along the edges of a rectangle. But I heard the big problem. I remember Sid Meier's talking about this in a talk I listened to a long time ago. Is casual players are afraid of hexagons. But if you dress them up like squares, then they're fine with it.
Interesting.
That is where Civ got me, when they dressed up their hexagons more as squares in Civ Revolution.
It's not as familiar as a nice, comforting square. Like, I see squares every day. When I see a hexagon, I'm like, what, stop? Yeah. I'm driving, buddy.
Hexagon, that means bees. Oh, yeah. No.
Exactly. I'm thinking of bugs. You're right.
To follow up on that, Indie Cube is the developer I was thinking of. So they've been making Mario Party games since 2012's Mario Party 9. And yes, they are based in Tokyo and Sapporo, and it is a bunch of Hudson employees that Nintendo then just hired after Konami shut down Hudson and said, no, you're not free. You still have to make Mario Party games for us, Hudson.
Go work in the Mario Party basement. So let's go over the other Game Boy Wars games. There's Game Boy Wars 2. Apparently, this is the fastest and best iteration of Game Boy Wars. There's 54 new maps. This is the first time, I believe, a map editor was part of the series. There's Game Boy Color support. And I believe this game, you could actually download and upload maps to the internet based on this Japanese-only peripheral called the Kiss Link, which allowed you to hook up your Game Boy to your PC and have it interface that way. I believe you could download and upload save games as well for this game.
That's neat, man.
So way ahead of its time.
I do wish, you know, if I could give my like 14-year-old self the copy of this game, I would have been playing it probably every road trip with the family or every vacation instead of, you know, Donkey Kong 94 over and over and over again.
Hey, that's still a fun game.
It is. It is. Yeah.
And we also have Game Boy Wars 3, which is basically Hudson abandoning a lot of Advance Wars ideas to kind of make a sequel to Military Madness. This one came out just a month before Advance Wars came out in America. This is like August of 2001 in Japan.
What a weird time to, I mean, that was especially for Nintendo of America. I don't think did it as much, but NCL, especially in the 20 years ago, seemed to be of the opinion of like, no system's dead. We're putting out a new game like the 3 years after after the subsequent system comes out.
I wish it was the same for the 3DS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but hey, you know, that Fire Emblem Gaiden game, I don't think sold very well.
That's probably
though,
true.
So,
yeah. People were crazy about the Switch in the early years, and they still are. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's too many changes to go over for this third Game Boy Wars game. But yeah, I think there are fan translations for all of these as of now, and they've probably been around for a while, but if you want to check these out, they're pretty accessible. But again, a lot of these, play them only for like intellectual curiosity, because once you get to Advance Wars, that's when the series figures itself out for sure. We'll get to Advance Wars very, very soon, but there's one more game, and that is Super Famicom Wars, and that came out in May of 1998. So a very late Super Famicom release. Never saw a physical release in Japan. Players could download it through the Satellaview peripheral or this Nintendo Power service, which, by the way, not related to the magazine at all. It was a separate service in which you bought a Nintendo Power cartridge, then you could bring it to certain convenience stores and download games through the service at a cheaper price.
Okay, all right.
So for a long time, I thought, oh, did Japan have a Nintendo Power magazine and they were giving out games with it? No. Nintendo Power was a confusingly named service in Japan only. That was, frankly, like way ahead of its time. Like bringing a cartridge into a store to get a game for cheaper than buying a new cartridge.
Yeah, see, Nintendo, everybody says they're so bad at online, but here they are selling digital games way before everybody else. You know, they get none of the credit for. No, they're very behind.
Then they got scared.
Yes, yeah, they've always. That's something Nintendo themselves brought up. At like 1E3, where Xbox Live was so far ahead of them, and they're like, well, did you know that there actually was a modem on your NES system? So really, we've been online for a pretty long time.
I'm sure they like to boast about that.
Yes, yeah.
So, oh, go ahead, Chris.
You can always crack open the bottom of your NES, and you see all these extra ports that's like, these don't do anything. But in Japan, it's like, oh, this hooks up to your internet, this hooks up to a sewing machine, all sorts of crazy things.
I can buy stocks with my Famicom. The world is my oyster. I can ruin myself financially with my Famicom. Intelligent Systems loved developing for the Super Famicom very late in its life. Their final Fire Emblem game came out in the year 2000.
That's,
for the Super Famicom.
I mean, you know, as guys who are on the tech side as well, maybe too, they were just so invested in the, you know, in the nuts and bolts of what makes it work, that they still feel so invested. They're like, no, we can still get a great game out of this that people are going to love, and it won't look old or musty because we know this machine better than anybody. Like, I could see that too. Plus, they probably at that point know how to make it cheaper and faster than most other developers at that time.
And the people still playing Super Famicom would buy a $120 Fire Emblem game in the year 2000.
That's where the biggest nerds are, and they're going to buy it. Yeah, I agree.
So, like I said before, remake of the first Famicom Wars, it really refines things, incorporates units and ideas from Game Boy Awards, and adds new features. So we have two new armies, the Green Earth and Yellow Comet armies. We have a four-player mode in this game as well. We have commanding officers, although they're really just used as a handicap to either make you more powerful or less powerful before going into battle. And one of them is literally Hitler, although he's called Hitler, but he's actually basically Hitler.
Wow, I missed that.
Yes. You have a character portrait, and it's Hitler.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
so he won't make it to future games. Don't worry.
That's good.
And also, they won't do this again until Days of Ruin, but within battles, units can level up to a certain amount. Like, they can get more powerful within a battle. They won't do that again until...
Veterancy is what they normally call it in strategy games.
It's veterancy?
Yeah.
Okay. So that feature is in this one, and I kind of wish it was in future games, because I like the idea of just some kind of progress being made, even if it's only within a battle. But Days of Ruin will use that again in a decade, that idea.
Yeah. You know, it's something I really loved in the Firaxis XCOM games of the last decade, where I think they learned a lot from games like Advance Wars and Fire Emblem, in that you get, like, you start with a guy who's just like nobody to you, just a random name generator on your team, and if they can survive the fight, and they come out the other side like, oh, this person's experienced, I'm invested now in this character. I may be named after an old coworker or something, and now I want to see them survive and get better at being a sniper. And Advance Wars, unfortunately, I don't think it could handle that on the same level, because XCOM can get away with that because it is like life and death, and you will see a head explode and they want you to feel like, yep, your friend's dead or whatever. Like, you played with this guy for 12 hours, now he's dead. Are you going to restart from the last save? What you going to do? Like,
yeah, with the War series, they want you to think all of these things are disposable toys. You can just make more of them if you need them.
The more toyetic it gets, the better it is to at least dissociate from the inherent violence and horrors of war from this story. Like, the more candy colored it gets.
That's why I think the military units that you put out there, they always keep this chibi design, even when we get the more anime style protagonist of your commanders, because those are real people, but the infantry are not.
Mm-hmm. They may as well be little green army men, you know.
They're a different species, it seems like, than humans.
Especially, it really, this is something too, if I were to replay any of these, I would maybe give the shot to Super Famicom Wars, because I always loved when NES games got remade as Super NES games, or virtually remade, like even Metroid to Super Metroid kind of thing. And also, like, the 16-bit aesthetic of the GBA games is Advance Wars to me. Like, it can't be improved upon. Like, I just love the divots of the pixels in the GBA ones, and so seeing it in its Super Famicom Wars form would also still be the 16-bittiness, and I'd still get some of that flavor and color palette that I love so much.
Yeah, what I really like is the vehicles are very well rendered, but they've got like the stubby Akira Toriyama kind of vehicle design, where they're just kind of squat and squished into each other.
Oh, yeah, squished in Toriyama style.
They're very fun to look at.
Especially like that in, we're going to talk about it later, but Advance Wars Black Hole Ryzen, that one has incredibly Toriyama designs with the Black Hole units that kind of look like, you know, rounded out space aliens.
Hmm.
Kind of like tech from the Namek or the Saiyans.
Yeah.
So final thoughts on this one is that it's a necessary step to the next generation. This one is developed by Intelligent Systems, but this is just, you know, one more step along the way until the series becomes what it truly is and what we know it as. And there's one more thing. I don't know who added this note, but I totally missed this. There was going to be a Nintendo 64 Wars game developed by Hudson in 1999, but that was canceled. And if you look at the video that someone linked me to, who actually put this in the notes? Is that Chris?
I put that in.
Okay. I didn't know about this. And if you look at the video that is online for this game, it's basically just Advance Wars, but with fuzzy N64 graphics. I don't know if any other details came out about this game.
It looks very much like the pre-Advance series, because all you have is the chibi guys and they're kind of in blocky N64 polygons. It's not a great looking game. I mean, who knows how it would have changed if it actually got to release, but aesthetically, it's not the most pleasing.
No, it's it also could be that the old Space World demo or commercial looks so fuzzy that it's but I mean, N64 games were fuzzy no matter what.
It's like VHS fuzziness with N64 fuzziness, like, working together.
It's basically just cotton balls bouncing off of each other. But I just learned about it for the first time too in prep for this, and yeah, it feels sort of like one of those things that Nintendo second guessed after handing it to a second party. On top of that, because the N64, especially in Japan, was not performing very well at all, and I could see it as the nothing I read on it indicated it was going to be a disk drive system, but it does, or game, but it does seem like the type of game they would have especially brought in of like, oh, and if you did it on the disk drive, you can build even more stuff.
Plant a tree and it would grow over time, which is the idea. I think that was like in every disk drive game. That was the idea. Every game developer wanted to do that for a time.
But then you'd burn it down as you captured the city.
Just wanted to do that, and he talked about it so much that... You know, it seemed like every developer.
That's true.
He made it seem like the future.
In 15 seconds, what is Nice Games Club?
It's our game dev podcast. Steven, help!
Game mechanics, accessibility, art and animation, level design, prototyping!
Everything that goes into making video games. How's that, Mark?
Nice. Listen to Nice Games Club wherever you get your podcasts, or at nicegames.club.
Need some adventure in your life? What Mad Universe is a podcast where two guys delve into the history of sci-fi, fantasy, and horror, and the impact it's had on pop culture.
Everything's the same politically, but we have ray guns.
The actual motive isn't to explore something that's, quote, scientifically possible.
But neither is Star Wars, and I know there's arguments about that, but I would definitely consider Star Wars science fiction.
You haven't read Dune!
No, I haven't.
You can never be the Kwisatz Haderach.
What Mad Universe on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Speaking of the future, let's talk about the fun year of 2001 with Advance Wars for the Game Boy Advance, which is why we know the series as Advance Wars. So I read a great director with the interview that Edge Magazine published in 2010. And because,
that was so such a great article, yeah.
And because it was published as long ago as 2010, you can only read it through the Internet Archive because nothing is ever kept on the Internet.
Yep. Hey, I'll say this as a former employee of Future Media, which also owns Edge. When that article came out, I was like, this is why I love Edge. Like they, but also it felt like they were the only people in that company that got to get away with it. If I said, hey, I got a month long plan to work on an Advance Wars article that it doesn't appeal to too many people, I'd never be allowed to do that. I would have been doing, I was doing two features a week at that time and no time for interviews with people.
No.
One of my favorite perks of working at a future company was you got free Edge magazine. And yeah, Edge. Yeah,
that's a pricey magazine.
Yes, yeah. It was nice to get that imported. Though also, it was a real haves and haves not situation at Future in my day because the UK folks would come in and they'd be like, oh yeah, we flew out to the desert in Africa to take photos of this. And then we would have to be told, like, for this magazine cover, use a screenshot that looks good and put a graphic over it.
We get free pizza sometimes.
Yes, yeah, it was. I could go on and on about it. But that Edge thing was great. And Edge, it was also funny, too, at Future because some British people didn't grow up at all with Nintendo and didn't give a fuck about it.
Or Ninty.
Yeah, and if you told them, like, hey, I'm doing another article on Nintendo history, they'd say, do people really like that? But Edge were their good British people who knew that Nintendo was great.
Hey, there's some out there. Stuart.
Yes, yeah.
Who hosts our podcast. Yeah. He's one of them.
Anyway, enough of my channeling my old hatred for British employers here.
In this interview, though, I was kind of surprised to find out that they want to make this game for the Game Boy Advance. It's a new system. Nintendo's like, especially Nintendo of America, is like, this is way too complicated. Like, this system is for babies. It's for children. No, I was an adult playing this, but Nintendo was like, this is for kids. This is too complex, though. They did so many things to make this more child-friendly, where it's like, even more colorful graphics. Kids love watching that damn anime. We're going to have some anime people talk to them throughout the entire game. Instead of just plopping you into battle, you're going to go through a series of tutorial missions that will, in excruciating detail, let you know how every facet of this game works. And that was their idea, and Nintendo approved it. But in the end, the director said, teenage boys played this. Children did not play this. And guess what, guys? I was 19. Yes. I was playing this game.
Yep, me too. I got it as my 19th birthday present. I played the crap out of it. It was always funny to me. I had this the same when I got to interview the director of Rocket Slime, and he was like, "Yeah, what we made this for kids. Why did you play it?" I was like, "Well, this is the nerds who play this."
I'm baby.
Rocket Slime was awesome. That's why it made you good.
You should have been wearing your name tag that says "I'm baby" on it.
I've been involved in making games that are for actual children, and no one else played them because they were for actual children.
Mm.
But this one, I think it's a huge part of it is the character of it. And I think the
cover is great. It's so just attractive and appealing.
And 2 years earlier, Nintendo of America would not have it. And even though it's not, say, as anime as, say, a Dragon Ball Z was read as, or a Sailor Moon was read as anime in America then, but it is not American aesthetic on the cover. And that they were embraced that enough was really impressive. I guess it shows to the success of Dragon Ball Z in America and similar anime.
We're deep in the Toonami era at this point in time.
Around the same time, NX thought, we can't put Akira Toriyama art on a Dragon Warrior re-release on the Game Boy Color.
Somebody render something quickly.
I think those tutorials, and especially the localization, Nintendo of America's Treehouse localization team is some of my favorites in the biz. They always find a fun way to do it without... Then they walk this, especially in Advance Wars, they walk this great tightrope of... They can't get as super inside a niche and nerdy as some of my other favorites and a Working Designs one, but they do have a sense of humor to them, and they know hardcores. They throw out some treats for the hardcores, but without making it so in your face of the hardest of hard winks to the camera. And I think Nate Bildorf and his team, on intelligent system stuff, especially with Fire Emblem and really with Paper Mario.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They get so much personality out of it. And that really is here in Advance Wars. So it was this great marriage of the hardcore strategy style that intelligent systems had been working on for a decade. And then you have all of this charm in the English localization that Nintendo of America's Treehouse were masters at the time.
Well, unfortunately, one thing we have to talk about is this game is in the shadow of September 11th, because not to be cute about this, but online you can see the release date is September 10th, 2001. Now, I could tell you from working in retail, that means the game would come into your store on that day. But usually you call people who reserved it if it was still early enough in the day, but then you put it out the next day. So for most people, this game came out on September 11th. I was one of those people. I had morning classes. The professor mentioned something. Yeah, a plane hit a building or something. I don't know what happened. We had class. I drive to Best Buy, between classes, go get this game. People are watching things on a TV, in movies. Oh, they're watching the news. Is something happening? It's not until I get home do I realize what has happened. But I literally picked up this game, and many people, hundreds of thousands of people, literally bought this game on September 11th of 2001, the worst possible timing. I'm surprised they considered sequels for this game in America based on, it happened on the day.
It must have had really strong sales there.
Yeah.
I would figure they never would. And it also was, pre-social media and people in forums. I remember seeing people joking, it's weird buying this game today or whatever. Not to give the blow by blow of my September 11th as well, which was spent in Florida in safety. But
oh yeah, I was in Ohio.
But it was I double checked this, the IGN review that spurred me to get it was published on September 10th. That's the date on it to this day, written by Craig Harris, one of their top Nintendo editors then at IGN. And I read that. I know I must have read that review that night, staying up late. I go to bed. I wake up to the towers falling. I think I'm going to go to college class in the afternoon. It is canceled. I was at my community college. And I remembered, Walmart is pretty close by. And I drove to my Walmart and it was one of the weirdest things to walk through a Walmart full of, like, you know,
people,
everybody's messed up,
buying toilet paper and bottled water, and
and I'm walking straight to the electronics department and say, hey, behind your counter, do you have Advance Wars? Yes, I do, said the woman, and she sold it to me, and I went home, and it was incredibly weird. But hey, then I could just vanish into the world of Advance Wars and just hearing...
You're going to hear that a lot. But yeah, this game, unfortunately, is associated with that date, and I can't ever separate it from that date and time, unfortunately. And you can understand why, really. But in positive news about this game, on a more positive note, rather, it's a huge step up in presentation for the series. Everything is very well defined on the small screen. They really bump up the level of artistry in the animations, in the artwork, in the cinema scenes. It's all very well done. And in general, it just streamlines everything that comes before. It streamlines everything that came before this game. None of the games that we actually played.
It's incredibly streamlined because, for the most part, the Advance Wars series is very iterative. They make small changes. You get like maybe one or two new units in most cases. And the units that you have in Advance Wars is actually drawn back from other games. It doesn't have like the aircraft carriers. It doesn't have the lighter fighter planes. It doesn't have the Neo tanks. They got rid of those too. Just a lot of ways it's, you know, it's a smaller refinement.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because they were afraid of like this not selling in the US, they scaled things back. And that's like why you have the more complex tutorial. That's why you probably have more of a story and lore, why the presentation has all the anime people. And I feel like that's why it was such a big success.
They made the scope much smaller, too, in that they limit the amount of units that can be on the screen at a time. When that, I mean, there was a hard limit, but they made it much smaller with this installment. And it also, this is the game that makes attacking first a vital part of battles. Before, when you had units attack each other, they would attack at the same time. But when it's your turn and you attack a unit, you are the one who fires upon them, and then they are the one who loses health. And that's a vital, vital part of this game, attacking first and being on the offense.
You know,
before you would attack at the same time, and the offense would have like they would automatically do like 5% more damage, but it was still not very good because it doesn't give an incentive to attack. You might as well defend for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't, you know, follow real war as much either. Like, no, if you attacked first, then you make fewer people who are going to be shooting back at you. That's part of this.
Yeah. To put it lightly.
Also, it's accepted in like warfare that to take out an entrenched position, you need like four times the forces. So this is completely counter to that.
That's true. Yeah, okay. But hey.
But I mean, that's more fun because that way you have more active. You're encouraged to attack, which is more fun than, you know, encouraged just to turtle and, you know, have both sides in a, you know, dugout positions like World War One.
And also the story, though, did have to make clear of like, the Orange Star Army is being invaded. This is a defensive war by you as the main character. And Olaf is
and
the bad guy.
This became the Orange Star.
Yes, yeah.
Henry Kissinger signed off on this war. Completely legal.
This is actually when they gave personality to the sides. Because before it was mostly just, you know, they could be just mere forces. But now they actually have distinct nations they're supposed to represent. Like the Orange Star is kind of like America slash Pro-Tacoon. They do nothing wrong. then you have, let's see, the Blue Moon, which is Soviet Russia, the USSR. You have Green Earth, which is kind of modern day Germany. Let's see, Yellow Comet, which is Japan. It would have been Imperial, but, you know, they don't seem to have actually an emperor. And then you have Space Nazis, the bad guys, Black Hole.
they're the fascistic ones who, unfortunately, by the later entries, are like, they should be a little funnier, shouldn't they? Like, these funny fascist guys.
And along with giving the army's personality, this is when we really get commanding officers who, like, have dialogue, they have personalities, they have CO powers, which is basically kind of like a limit break that affects the entire battlefield. There's only a choice between three in the beginning of the game, but I believe later in the game you can choose different ones. Is that true?
Yeah, there's, like, two for each other army.
Right.
And at this point, the COs, while they're incredibly unbalanced, they're actually trying to be somewhat balanced, unlike the other ones where it's a handicap system.
Yeah, I think the definitely some are more equal than others. And there's like when I went to the wiki for the COs, they on the Advance Wars wiki, people had like tactics and they're like, you don't want to play as this character in this game. Just don't do it. Don't pick them. They're not good. Like,
they're a definitive tier list about which ones you can play. against others. And some are just, you know, outright better. Like, you can either spam forces incredibly or, you know, make incredibly strong forces that are hard to kill. Some are luck-based, so it's kind of a roll of the die whether or not they're good. Some are very situational. Like, they have, I think it's Sanja for the Yellow Comet that's really Fog of War-based.
Hmm. Yeah, and there are 11 in this game, and they would only increase the amount of commanding officers in future games, especially as you get to the games where you can combine their powers.
Oh, yeah, the tag system, that's fun too, yeah. But,
but yeah, lots of stuff is happening in this game. There's 88 single-player maps, multiplayer maps, a map editor, a ton of content. And Henry wants to talk about the composer, something I neglected. What is up with this this composer, Taishi Senda?
Oh, yeah. Well, as I was playing one again, I was like, God, every song in this I've heard a million times, but they never get old to me. But and they are like Desai. They're a great like thinking song, like, and especially the Orange Star song I really like a lot. But yeah, Taishi Senda, I was trying to figure out, like, he must have done some other stuff, but I checked Moby Games and a couple of wikis, and I couldn't find any other credits for him beyond the first Advance Wars, Pokemon Puzzle Challenge, and a couple other, like, smaller games from around the same time in Intelligent Systems. Hmm. I'm not sure, and he didn't really work on 2 either.
I mean, he should still be credited for that because his themes are used throughout Advance Wars 1, 2, and Dual Strike. I mean, they modify them a little bit, but it's still the basic themes, and they are all, you know, rocking good time.
Yeah, they're timeless.
Yeah, I guess the music, I guess the themes for the characters are all established in this game too, as well. Yeah, and same
with, like, oh, and here's the CEO music, here's the starting screen music. Like, yeah, they've really. There's, like, it's, like, really guitar-y is something I really like about it. Yeah.
The guitar samples on this kind of music usually are pretty cringy, but they actually find good samples. It's not like the Super Punch-Out soundtrack, which is kind of cringy. Well, a little too metallic.
And really, when I played this game, it was when I truly fell in love with the Game Boy Advance, because, you know, the first games I played on it, I beat Super Mario Brothers 2 Advance on there, and, you know, I was like, well, this is a fun version of a game I like, but also won't shut up, and it doesn't feel that special. And then I played Fire Pro Wrestling, which I was like, well, this is fun, but way super hardcore. And then finally, I get this game, and it is, to me, an entirely original franchise. And also, by that point, I was so hardcore that online, I was hardcore enough online as a Nintendo nerd to know that this was a series that had previously been denied to me.
Yes.
So that also made it, like, special. And then when I got so into it, I was like, now even more mad Nintendo didn't feel like I was good enough as an American to get these games. But based on all the improvements now that I know they made in this game, I think they made the right choice.
Yeah.
To if they had tried to sell Super Famicom Wars here with just an English language version of what they made in Japan, it probably wouldn't have had half the popularity that Advance Wars did.
Definitely. They really made a lot of smart refinements for their big Western launch for the series for this one. Let's talk about the second game. It's called Advance Wars 2, would you believe it? Black Hole Rising came out in 2003.
No giggling about that title, guys.
Oh, right.
It's just about the story. The black hole is rising.
And by the way, the first three of these, Advance Wars 1, Advance Wars 2, and Advance Wars Dual Strike, all on available on God's Perfect System, the Wii U. So if you want to buy them before March of 2023, you can still do that. Buy the originals. That's how I was playing them.
They're only on there because the Wii U did so poorly. They're like, all right, let's put these on there. But hey, it is a great way to play those.
I mean, not to complain, the 3DS should have had Game Boy Advance download games and DS download games.
Well, also, why aren't they on the Switch also? I understand. They could say, like, oh, the Dual Strike can't be on they can be on Wii U DS games because there's two screens, but we can't do that with the Switch. But it's like, these Advance Wars games should be, the GBA games should just be on the Switch thing.
I agree. Take my money.
I'll give you the money, Nintendo. But I guess they always know they've got my money.
Yeah.
They get it. I'll hand it to them.
We don't have to ask you for your money. Let's move on and talk about this game. You know, honestly, not a ton of new things to talk about. Lots of little refinements. There's Super CO powers, which basically are CO powers, but there's a second level you have to wait longer to use. And there's one new unit called the Neo Tank. You know, medium tanks gave me enough hell in the first game. I don't want to mess with the Neo Tank. Chris, sorry.
Neo Tank's new in this game, but it was originally, I think, in Super Famicom Wars.
That's right, yeah.
So
they imported
it. Just going through the old hits. And you'll see this throughout the early DS series. Like I said, the game is mostly iterative, and they're just going back to some of the old iterations that worked.
I like the Neo Tanks. They're kind of, you know, they're like froggy. They can walk on terrain that other things can't. I would feel they're not worth the price, though. Like, I was a very frugal player of the games, usually. Like I said, so Sammy is usually my favorite, and her mech troops with their bazookas, I would often tell myself, like, well, sure, they can't move as much as me as a small tank, but they've got just the same amount of firepower, and I'd rather just have two of them instead of one small tank.
I think also you can only add so many new things to this game because there's already so much to keep track of. I feel like if you add too many units, it will become just very like inelegant in terms of how you, you orchestrate all of these moving pieces together.
We'll see that in the next game.
Oh yeah, the game that one seems like a fun mess. As for this one, there's a few new things. There's like they add pipes as a kind of terrain you can't cross. I was watching
planes cannot fly over pipes.
Yep, it's just impossible. The pipe's too high.
They have too much respect for the pipes.
That did drive me crazy.
And apparently, the pipes are mostly used in the map editor to make the map smaller because you can't just select a smaller map. You can just start with like a pipe surrounding an area and then work from there.
Okay.
So that's basically, it was kind of like a hack to make a smaller multiplayer map. What people don't like about this one is like you have to play through the tutorial stages again, which I think is true for every Advance Wars game.
Yeah, but I was so used to that with Pokemon games that are like, so look, you still can't just check a box that says, I've played Pokemon before. Please don't tell Matt, explain this to me. I want to pick my starter. And that, so when Advance Wars also makes me play the tutorial again, I'm like, yeah, I've played Pokemon. Yeah. I know you have to do this. You just can't let me check a box.
It was the style at the time to make you play through the tutorial for every sequel.
Well, you mentioned Pokemon. That actually makes me think, as the DS series of games progress, the art style also progresses each one. Like the original one, I'd say, is very much looks like Pokemon, but each game, they age it up just a little bit.
Yeah, that is true. You can see it in Andy's face. Andy ages each time.
The audience is growing up. You were supposed to be a child.
It's more making him grow older.
But he's so good at it and great at fixing stuff. Andy's fun. I like him. You know, the Super CO powers, I liked the balance of that because... just replaying 2 again, I was like, yeah, this reminded me of the choices I had to make of like, I have saved up to just one CO power and I'm like I'm almost there to super and I'm just thinking like, oh, but I could just cash in my regular right now and it'd be really helpful. Do I really want to wait until the super? Because what if they kill a lot of my units in between waiting for the super? Like it's the risk reward of the super was really interesting.
So many choices in these games.
Also,
so many choices.
When you have enough power for the super, every single turn you're not using it, you're wasting the chance to get more power. So
it kind of
makes sense to cash out early sometimes.
And apparently the composer for this game was new to the series, Yoshito Sakigawa. He worked on later games in the WarioWare series and also Paper Mario, Fire Emblem, and Project Steam. So a lot of Intelligent Systems stuff.
Yeah. Sakigawa is a great composer, worked on tons of cool stuff. I just think he was the one who the director of Steam, when I talked to him about, you know, in his presentation, he said, I love Advance Wars. That's when I perked up the most in his presentation. He's like, I love Advance Wars, and I wanted the composer of Advance Wars to compose music for my game. And I got to chat with him a little bit about, like, yeah, that Advance Wars music rules.
You should make one of those games.
Yeah.
Cancel this game.
Yeah. If I could go back in time, I'd tell him, like, dude, can you at least just call this Advance Wars Steam? Just call it that, you know?
Steam Wars.
That game's all right.
Let's make Advanced Fire Emblem Wars.
That should be the cross. That's the only way we'll get a new Advance Wars. If it's Advance Wars and a portal opens up and Fire Emblem characters come in.
And now Andy and Sammy can date.
Ooh, that's going to be the future of the series if it comes back, I think.
But, man, that Advance Wars 2, it really was the one where I believe I beat the campaign. And I still played the War Room a ton, but it was the one where, even more so than the first game, by the end of the campaign, I was like, this is a slog. I'm just forcing myself to finish this thing. It had a little of the Lost Levels thing of thinking like, this is for super players. If you beat the last one and you made it this far, then we can make the regular campaign even more difficult. But I don't know, Chris, maybe it was easier for you, the campaign.
Yeah, I don't remember much of a difference between that one. I mean, yeah, they always get really difficult by the end. Like, the last mission is always going to take you multiple hours to complete.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't remember being markedly different. I remember those pipes were hell because they'd make all these choke points with them.
Oh, and by the way, on an irregular, speaking of all those hours, when you're playing on a regular Game Boy Advance that does not have a charging cable built into it, like, there is save mode, so it's not like you're like, but it is like a battle against the batteries. Like, God, I'm killing this unless I invest in rechargeable batteries or a power cable into it. I'm killing my batteries over and over and over again with this machine.
Okay, I think I was spared from that because I only really got a Game Boy Advance when I got the SP.
Oh, well, there you go. Mm-hmm. See, I had the Iceberg White regular version of it. I mean, though it's perfect for the Game Boy player on a GameCube. Like, that's a great way to play it.
So we're moving on to talk about Advance Wars Dual Strike. Yes, it's an early DS game, which means it's got a DS subtitle, which is how it should have always been for every game.
Legally, like, yeah. If you can get out a second game on the system, maybe then you can not do a DS subtitle, but your first one at least has to be that.
I respect them all.
Yeah,
does this make it the only game that has two console names in it?
So, oh,
Advance Wars and then Dual Strike.
Yeah, and actually, so it gets so confusing because I believe in Japan this game is called Famicom Wars DS.
Yes, yep. Yeah,
so
that's right.
Even in Japan, the name is confusing.
Again, I was so excited for this. I didn't much care for the DS at launch, like, and also it was when I had to buy games for myself and was saving up for other things, so I didn't make time for it. But when I knew an Advance Wars was coming, then in like 3 months before, also I think Nintendo did a big price slash on it right in early 2005. So
that's when I got mine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got the electric blue of the original DS line. And yeah, Dual Strike, day one purchase for me. Like, that was the system seller for... I would have bought a DS eventually because it ruled in a million ways. But I was an earlier adopter because of Dual Strike.
This one shakes up things a lot more than Advance Wars 2. And I feel bad I never played it because I kind of wrote off Advance Wars as being not for me after the first game. But it seems like... with how messy this one is and the different ways you can break it, I feel like it would be better for me to play this one because you can level up your COs to make battles easier. You can level them up outside of the campaign and go into the campaign maps with a more powerful...
It's not just leveling up, but you select a series of perks that make them ridiculously powerful sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I need. And also, their powers are even more powerful and can be used more often. So they're really... I think they recognize the first games were too hard for some people, and I think this is them trying to address that. But yeah, what's your stance on this game, Chris? Do you enjoy this one more than the advanced ones? How do you feel about this one?
I mean, I find it fun, but you have to cheese it some.
Yeah.
Which I feel is a bit unfortunate. Because, you know, it makes it incredibly easy to cheese, but it also makes that, you know, kind of mandatory. And, I mean, this game, you can get ridiculously powerful. Like, there are certain, you know, commanders you can use where you can get essentially three turns in a row.
Yeah, there's one female commander in this. I can't remember her name. Maybe it's like Rachel or something, where she is the most overpowered CO. Like, you can get multiple turns with her. In the videos I watched about this game, they were saying this is who you want to play as.
Oh, yeah.
And you can choose two commanding officers in this game. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, because dual. Yeah, so
almost every mission you pick two.
Yeah, and Rachel rules. That's the orange star lady who's very good. Yes.
I was actually thinking Eagle. Who has the power to make all the units except for infantry move again.
Yeah, that double move is, Eagle is interesting. I plays him a ton because Air Warfare is okay in the game. A good bomber I like, but I, Yeah, I Dual Strike for me, it was the best of times and the blurst of times for Advance Wars, because I think the War Room, and it reused maps and everything. It had like everything I had loved in Advance Wars games all in one place, because it brought back all these classic maps, and plus two screens, like to have the bottom touch screen. You could even do touch inputs for moving characters around on the screen, which is perfect. Like, and then on top of that, in a regular match, the top screen is informational, which is very helpful in case you forget some of the rules of characters. But I didn't so much care for the two-screen gimmick stuff of like, okay, well, this is happening on the ground, and then up in the sky, like, you know, a shield helicarrier is fighting a bunch of helicopters or whatever.
And like, that, in that battle you're not controlling, right? The one on the top? Yeah, from what I read, I didn't get a chance to play this one, but it sounds like you can send troops to the top screen, and if that battle is finished early, the CO will join you on the bottom screen for your battle.
You control it, but
okay, you still control
back.
It. Got it. Right. Okay.
Well, I think it depends. I think it changes between times. Sometimes you can just send them up. Sometimes it's auto controlled. Sometimes you control it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It varies. That's right.
Yeah. Again, this is kind of a messy game.
It's very messy.
And the dual strike system, the titular dual strike, is a very powerful thing in this game. I believe it gives you two full consecutive turns with both of the CO powers active.
Yeah.
So
and with good combinations, you can get to up to 130% like offensive buff.
Wow. Yeah. So again, this game was made for me, and I didn't know it. Like, I needed these cheat codes for Advance Wars.
You have to realize this is a double-edged sword, because yes, you could do that to the enemy, and that's really fun. They could do it to you.
Right,
and that
right.
Isn't really fun.
Yeah, it's a real push and pull on that. But yeah, I mean, as far as a collection of like things that had been in the series too, like it had many of the maps of the previous two games in it, and the music and the COs. It did do a thing that is also a very Nintendo thing that I don't like, which is where they feel the 1 and 2, you know, your main guy's Andy, like he is your the lead of the COs. And then I think they had the feeling by Dual Strike, they're like, well, Andy's more of like a five. He's been around too long. He's been the lead for too long. Hmm. We need, just like every Pokemon game is a new Pokemon kid, it's not repeating Red from 1 over and over again. Same deal with this. They're like, oh, it's Jake. And I just like Jake with his headphones and he thinks he's so cool.
He's kind of a poochie.
He's very, yes.
They Rostified Andy.
Yeah. And then when Andy comes back, I'm like, there's Andy again. Never playing as you again, Jake. See you later, Jake.
They try a lot of things in this game. There are things like survival mode. It's kind of like a war of attrition kind of thing. There's also like a mini game just called combat, in that you're just playing an action game with the units.
Yeah, that I did play that a little with my pals who also had DSs. I was like, guys, you don't have the game in here. You can just, let's just be in different tanks shooting at each other in real time. Like, it's just, it's a silly extra mode that isn't really Advance Wars.
I mean, the game's all about excess. And this one, like most games, they just add like one or two new units or kind of redefine the rules a little bit. This one, they added 6. Some of them are just, the rules are kind of crazy. Like, they make something that's even bigger than the Neo Tank. They make, like, I think the Mega Tank.
Yeah.
Which is just more armor, less speed, and it's just meant to bulldoze through when you're already winning.
It's a fun.
They also have like crazier things, like the Black Boat, which is a repair boat that can also ferry some infantry. And you can make black bombs, which are missiles that fly through the air and then blow up a certain section of squads. It's a bit excessive.
I love that mega tank because it looks like it was drawn by a 5-year-old. Of like, no, more guns on the tank.
And like a unit that can only exist on pipes, which feels like very, very limited use.
The pipe runner. I hate that. Pipes are some of my least favorite things in Advance Wars. I hate pipes.
But
one question I have about the mega tank, though, is for the longest time, the most powerful tank in the game was the medium tank. I really wonder if they knew how crazy they're going to get with their tanks when they're making like Game Boy Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like kind of funny in retrospect that the mother of all weapons is the medium tank.
Yeah, yes, that doesn't sound right.
And not the mega tank. It's just like, yeah, when I saw a medium tank on the map, I'm like, ah, what am I going to do about this thing? Even the tutorial mode. Yeah, like this one seems like a fun mess. They would get back to basics with the next and final game. But I
would say they'd get more than basics. They reinvent the wheel in some ways.
Hmm.
a great piece of design.
We will get to that, but Chris had the smart idea in that instead of talking about the spinoffs last, that's a big bummer to end the podcast on, we're going to talk about the spinoffs now and then talk about Days of Ruin. So I don't know what was going on with Nintendo. Maybe they were like, well, this Wars thing, it has legs. This could be like a multi-genre series. But it feels like they kind of backed off the idea because this Battalion Wars series was first like an Advance Wars game in name. I think it was called Advance Wars Under Fire. And it stayed as Famicom Wars in Japan. But Nintendo went to Kuju Entertainment, a UK developer, and they basically had them make this third-person squad-based shooting game that has very little in common with Advance Wars outside of the chibi characters. But it's just, it looks like it's fine for the time. I don't know if this would age well at all. I know I played it through a Gamefly rental when it was new, and I kind of bounced off it. But it's a very weird, weird spinoff for the series.
No, I rented this game and felt insulted by it because, one, not turn-based. It loses a lot of the hardcore stuff. And then I did lose the anime aesthetic because, and I mean, I probably did look into it and like, oh, it wasn't even developed by real Nintendo. Boo, no, thank you. Like, even, I mean, I think Kuju is like, they work with Nintendo so much, they may as well count as one. But I just, I looked down on it not being Intelligent Systems for sure and didn't really give it a chance. It was a lot. But when I played it, I was like, well, yeah, it's just like a kiddier third-person shooter. Like, that's how it felt at the time. Which, the biggest compliment I would give it is that the sequel has a clever name. I like, or at least I love the logo to the sequel.
Oh, yeah. What is it again, the logo?
It's, well, because like, it's Battalion Wars 2, but it's B-W and then two lowercase I, so it's B-Wee.
B-Wee.
So it looks like, it gets the Wii, not unlike Dual Strike getting DS in it. It does look like the name of the console.
I'm here to pick up my reservation. I reserve B-Wee. Yeah. Do you have B-Wee? Chris, have you played these games?
I think I played it. I think I got a Gamefly rental. I was always disappointed by it, especially the look of this, because they kind of have the two art styles where you have like the chibi gameplay and then you have like the more realistic avatars that do this war and story. But I don't really like the look of it because it's definitely got the a European sheen on it, which I think was really bad when it came to early CGI, and I really don't like the story characters. They look like dead dolls talking to you.
Yeah, the aesthetic is very like early European CGI. You're totally right about that. There's something, maybe it's because I didn't grow up with it or whatever. It turns me off, is what I'm saying here.
Yes.
But yeah, they made two of these, one for the GameCube in 2005 and one that was early Wii game. So it has a lot of the Wii novelty value packed in where it's like you're aiming with the Wiimote, you're doing things like that.
Well, and it's so the early, I mean, early Wii games also are just like, well, this was a GameCube game and we now just put some waggle on it. Yeah. Like, that's what it is.
Could this be a series? The answer was no.
No. I mean, yeah. And also Battalion Wars, that's a dumb name. Battalion, like, but it also, I think when you said that it originally was presented with Advance Wars in the title, again, this is guessing, but based on history, often Nintendo will think about giving something the official name of a series, even though it's not done internally, and then they decide, no, we're not giving you that name. This isn't officially an entry in the series. This isn't Metroid. This is Metroid Prime or whatever, kind of hedging thing. And so I wonder if it was just Intelligent Systems saying, we're the guys who make Advance Wars games, not any other company.
Yeah, it could have been politics. And I feel like I couldn't find the story behind it, but I'm guessing Kuju developed the prototype and brought it to Nintendo maybe. They're like, we love Advance Wars. Here's your idea for like a 3D Advance Wars game or something. That's what it seems like. It seems likely that could
be.
You
hear those stories all the time of developers that had a pitch for like, well, this could be the next F-Zero. And then they're told, no, this is not the next F-Zero. And then they make it their own thing. But I do want to, last thing I want to credit, I meant to say in the earlier stuff with Advance Wars, is that thanks to the first Advance Wars doing well, and then also 2 months later, Smash Brothers Melee coming out with the Fire Emblem characters in it, that's how we got Fire Emblem finally in America. It wasn't just that everybody knew who Marth was because of Fire Emblem, or because of Smash Brothers Melee, but also because into Advance Wars sold so well that they realized there actually was an audience for strategy games on the Game Boy Advance in America. And so we finally got it.
I'm glad you pointed it out. And those games were too hard for me as well, those initial Game Boy Advance ones. But yeah, because of Advance Wars selling well, Nintendo of America, I was like, oh, people will, they like challenging complex games on this platform.
And then 5 years later, they took them away again, mm-hmm. or 6 years later. And then we started to get them back.
Let's talk
it's
about
kind of weird that the Melee or the Smash Brothers games made Fire Emblem popular when they've never had an Advance Wars character in any of those games.
I was sure yeah. Ultimate would get one. I really thought it would happen, but I looked it up. Like,
I mean, think at least an Echo Fighter. I mean, you can make like Eagle, Star Fox, or something.
I yeah. wonder if the what are the, like the Mii players called in those games? Like the Mii War,
you
Mii
know,
Fighter.
Not even a Mii Fighter costume.
You can get like Undertale costumes in like Geno from Mario RPG. You can't get Andy like with a wrench or something.
Nah, they've got sprites, and they used to have are the spirits.
Yeah,
that's it. Spirits. And in previous ones, but not in Ultimate, there was an assist trophy of units would you throw it out, and then like the infantry and tanks would kind of roll out
right.
and hit people. But yeah, it's yeah. How can you not? Andy and Sammy and Max are perfect to look like a Mii fighter, like in all three types. Like,
there's a Xenoblade 2 character in Smash Brothers. There's room for Advance Wars.
Well, you know what? If these Advance War characters walked around with swords, maybe they'd be put in as like the 80th sword guy.
There's
in a Smash
one of these
game.
Guys is a sword, right? One of these Advance Wars characters.
Konbei's got a sword.
I thought
right?
so. Yeah.
yeah,
get him in there. Make him a shadow version of Marth. Or something. Let's say Marth. Let's move on to the final game, Advance Wars Days of Ruin, released in January of 2008 for the DS. It's called Dark Conflict in Europe. And you know what?
A much worse name.
Yeah, I like Days of Ruin. And when I saw this in 2008, this is when, you know, Japan was having a rough time with, you know, marketing games overseas, developing games overseas. And I rolled my eyes at this thinking, oh, yeah, you're making a grim, dark Western version of something people already like. And then doing research now, I found out, oh, no, this is actually a good game. Like, the you might not like the aesthetics of it, but it's actually a very well-designed game. And some consider, like, the high point of the series, and a lot of people are sad there were no more because it feels like they were just trying out new ideas and refining things even more with this final game.
Yeah, I also think it was an important move they needed to do of like scaling back, like because Dual Strike was so much and like you guys were saying, you can cheese it so much and there's so so many options and just you're kind of overwhelmed with options. Days of Ruin, especially through story, had to just take and take and take away from you. It's like no, you can't. You're in a post-apocalyptic world. You resources are slim. It's not as fun anymore. You're not flying into outer space, and also things aren't as cute. You know, it's a rougher, meaner world for Advance Wars. I missed the cuteness, though. I will say, I was a little missing the cuteness of the characters, and instead of having to hear about like, oh, everybody's dead, like just so many, like most people are dead, and guess what? If you didn't die, you're surrounded by people who are fighting over the last things for anybody alive. Yeah, it's
I mean,
rough.
It seems like that at first, but you know, as of course. The game gives you more and more toys to play with as it goes on. It seems like, well, maybe the apocalypse didn't destroy all the resources. We could still make battleships and bombers.
We could still have factories for some reason.
That's true.
Yeah. So, Chris, I believe you wrote down some of these new units. They add a lot. They refine a lot. So, what's going on with this this last Advance Wars game?
They decided to make it a lot more to encourage movement more, because the other ones, you know, people were pretty safe because. For the base unit set, things have been the same since like the Game Boy Wars time. You know, we still had in the low end, you had regular infantry, the mechanized infantry, you know, recon tanks, anti-air, you know, a lot of the same things. But this one, it had several units that make it encourage faster movement. The big one is you have motorbikes, which allow infantry to move fast over roads. Which really allows you to push an offense real quick because you can capture with lightning speed. You know, but they also have several other units that also encourage, you know, faster gameplay. Like, you can move in your anti-tank weapons, which are a ranged unit that can also, you know, survive on the front line and counterattack. They brought back some old favorites, like they have seaplanes are back.
Oh, yeah, those were cool.
I think they were one of the Game Boy Wars. They made it so the APCs can make temporary ports and airports so that you can more quickly repair your units. With Veterancy, they encourage you to actually keep your units alive and emerge units.
Yeah. Oh, the merge. Yes. Yeah, that was a really cool. Because I already was a. I liked merging units just for like the cash purposes too, and also, you know, it could, you could hold out better.
So merging is when you combine two units on the map to form one unit with higher health.
If you, well, it'll get you up to 10. If you have, say, an 8 and a 5, and you add them together. And say that the base cost is 1,000. If you put those together, you have a surplus of 3, so you get 300 back in your money as well. So it can be used for cash for building other units too. It's a really cool strategy element.
And one thing I was reading up on this game about is that CO powers are thought out completely in a different way. So they're not as overpowered. They work in a different way. You attach a CO to a unit. That unit levels up to its max level immediately and gives that unit and units within a specific range certain bonuses that are passive. And then I believe this all damage done within this zone will then fill up a meter that lets you use the traditional CO power. Mm-hmm. So you have to work a little harder to get it. It's not just everything you kill gets you more in your meter for the CO power. It's got to be within this range that you've attached the CO to this specific unit. Do I have that right? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot more complex, too. It's not just about, you know, building up your limit break meter or whatever.
Yeah, but it's a lot more local. So you can't just affect the whole entire battlefield with, you know, one press of a button.
Yeah, and, you know, design-wise, I really, I like the aesthetic so much now. At the time, I did think it was too much of a bummer. But, you know, by 2008, we'd seen so much of what war really is and what the, outcome of it is that, to then be like really steeped in it. Yes, this is very serious. And it was more of it was just depressing, you know, and it also, I was getting a little tired of the idea in 08. This was the same of like Square was making a lot more Western style games than too. And so this has more of a Western aesthetic in the, you know, depressingness of it and the darker tone and everything. And I kind of rejected that of like, oh, great. It's another Japanese series I love that feels like they have to do X, Y, and Z to appeal even more to the Western audience. Though then when I found out like this game didn't even come out in Japan until years later, I guess it just turned into, it was just an American franchise at that point. So I can understand their or Western franchise at that point, because it also was North America and Europe. That they decided, well, if we're going to be exclusively Western, then let's redesign this a little more to what is popular in 2008 with gamers.
Yeah. There's a full Japanese localization on the cartridge, but they didn't actually sell this. Well, they never sold it in Japan. It was a Nintendo Club Nintendo Platinum reward, this game, which is nuts. Like you're leaving money on the table. You've got the localization.
That's insane that they wrote the full Japanese dialogue, and then, which I guess they had to do because then the localizers in the territories can use that as their base starting point. But to write all of that text and then not actually use it in a game until it's a 3DS freebie to spend your platinum points on.
Yeah, and while we talk about it being more Western focused, it's still very much in the tradition of, you know, older teenage shonen manga.
Yeah,
I'd say it's kind of like a Chainsaw Man. And, you know, while the story starts out really grim dark, it lightens up and becomes much more in line with the rest of the series. You can tell because it's just chock-a-block full of clones.
Yes,
the Advance Wars series has so many of. The one big difference, I mean, while it gets more friendly at the end, the one big difference is it never goes back to the, gee whiz, war is fun that we get in the early Advance Wars.
And plus, now it feels even weirder. There is a deadly pandemic that kind of killed most people in the world in the game, which makes blue flowers sprout out of your corpse when you die. And so, especially when you start the game, you know, you're being hit with so much seriousness that it's like, okay, world's kind of over. Not much resources left. And also, you might just drop dead of this plague at any point as well. So
have fun.
Yes, yeah, have fun.
The plague and the environmental message there, that's like very Nausicaa. So it's like,
yeah,
it's very much rooted in Japanese storytelling. This is like the first Advance Wars games where they actually recognize that other ethnicities exist, and I think it has the first black person.
Wow, okay.
That is true. That's right. Yeah.
It's, it took 8 games or so for it to happen.
20 years, I guess, from 88 to 2008. Man, that's... And you know what? The style, too, while it still was worked on by, you know, a lot of the same intelligence system people, they did bring in a ringer. They got Hiroaki Hashimoto, who primarily does the art for like the King of Fighters games. It's the very so if you wonder why every character in this looks very SNK, that's because they hired Hiroaki. Well,
that explains it. Yeah,
yeah, every character, but there's actually some like lesser important like civilian types who actually have a quite a different artistic style. They look like much more realistic. It's kind of jarring.
I have a feeling Hiroaki only did the leads in it and not the secondary people.
That's money.
I have a feeling.
That would cost more money.
But you know what? They can't be as chesty as his SNK designs for the ladies. Nintendo toned it down a little bit.
Is this T for teen? Or
they
is
could
this...
have one. That could be their CO power somehow.
That's what Nell would look like in this universe.
Unfortunately, though, War is rated E for everyone, just as it is in real life. If it was rated T for teen, we could have some busty CEOs, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Even in the T for teen Fire Emblems, they put a little saltpeter in the diet of the developers. Developers for Fire Emblem and Nintendo.
They saved their horniness for the mobile version, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And technically, this is the first online Advance Wars game. You could play it online without a peripheral. You could play it online with your DS. I'm sure it was fun, but you can't do it anymore. There's probably like private servers. There's probably some way to do this online through emulation or something, but... Yeah, this was an online game because multiplayer was always a feature of this that we never talked about, because I don't think any of us ever really indulged in the multiplayer in this.
Advance Wars is for me to be alone with my mind.
Your thoughts.
Yes, just a private cave.
I played a little bit of the multiplayer, but what really makes it just take forever is you have to wait on someone else to play the game.
Yeah.
You know, by the time we got to the Advance Wars series, the AI was quick enough where it wasn't really that much of a slog. But when you're playing a 4-player map, oh my God, it takes forever.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And unfortunately, you have to wait for them to finish. You can't do like in modern Civ games, you can do simultaneous turns. But in this, no dice. Hmm.
Well, because your turns are counter to their turn, where they place guys. So yeah, it's and in Days of Ruin rated E10. I believe the relatively new E10 rating for 2008.
See, it's adult.
There were different
10-year-old adults.
Different demarcations. But yeah, this game, very interesting, and I think probably because it was, well, not like a late DS release, but this was like the party was kind of over for the DS release, where also there was a lot of piracy happening too in that world.
Oh yeah.
So like after 2007, 2006, the DS, it was like, well, the gimmick is over. Everyone who bought it for brain training has moved on, and only the hardcore people are around. Not enough to make this an recurring series. And obviously the story is, as we said before, this is 2008. Fire Emblem Awakening was 2012. That was the last chance for Fire Emblem. There wasn't a new one of those for a while. And it was such a huge success. That is where they put all of their development into that and Paper Mario games. And Advance Wars has been left on the sidelines until hopefully this year when... is it Way Forward?
It's Way Forward, yes. I made it sound like Next Level earlier. It's Way Forward, which are based out of Valencia, California, not Vancouver,
right.
Which is where Next Level is. Yeah.
But yeah, this will be the first quote-unquote new game for the series in 14 years, I guess.
Yeah, it's... As an Advance Wars fan, it's been a tough decade. But yeah, I mean, because Days of Ruin came out for me, especially Days of Ruin came out right before I started in the games press in like March of 2008. And, one thing I always wanted to do was review an Advance Wars, and it never came out ever. There wasn't one. And I just got to see as the blue ocean grew, there wasn't space for Advance Wars in that. Like, they're not going to make that kind of game when they're really, especially in Nintendo of America, aiming more at a wide mainstream audience, not the core audience. And then, unfortunately, once they do start targeting the core audience again, it's Fire Emblem, and Intelligent Systems, they should only be making Fire Emblem games, as seems to be the thought Nintendo has now.
I think they're making a new huge one right now.
Yes. And on top of that, Koei Tecmo's making another of Musou entry in Fire Emblem. And then, so I spent a decade of watching Nintendo Directs, waiting for an Advance Wars announcement every time, going like, is it going to happen? And then when last year in 2021, the music started, I told my husband, like, shush, wait, that's Advance Wars music. It's Advance Wars music, yes. And once I saw it was a remake, and at first I was like, it's a remake, and Nintendo is not remaking it. But way forward, they are great, and they love, I am certain the people who work there, there are people who love it as much as I love Advance Wars, if not more so. And so I look forward eventually to playing what their vision of remaking it is. And my hope would be that if it was successful, that Way Forward could then sell Nintendo on, can we just make a new Advance Wars, guys?
Yeah, I think it will be them if this remake is popular. I think they will be making the next Advance Wars. That's just my wild speculation there.
The market condition seems to be, or reality definitely seems to be getting in the way of the ability for a game about warfare and invasion and exploding people to be that marketable in the year of 2022, unfortunately.
I don't know. They'll keep making Call of Duties.
That's true.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's because you
it's
shoot
just the
not
aesthetic.
White.
I think we can no longer ignore that. War is hell.
Well, but also in the Call of Duty games, they are very, they're as American as it gets. And also it's about the scary brown people you're shooting. Like this, Advance Wars isn't from that kind of jingoist standpoint. It's got its own jingoism, not this time.
Advance Wars is too nuanced, I think, is what we're saying here. But yeah, it's a fun, interesting series, one that's been, kind of cast aside for more popular things. But there's a lot of these games. Hopefully one day they'll be more available. Hey, if you got a Wii U, it's jackpot time, baby. Everything except for Days of Ruin you can buy. You can buy 1 and 2 for Advance, and also Dual Strike. And one thing I'll say is that in the trailer for Advance Wars 1 and 2 Reboot Camp, something is indicated but not fully explained. It sounds like there's going to be a system in the game that you can rewind to past turns. That I think that needs to be a part of every turn-based strategy game, if that's actually being included. Yeah. Like, after playing Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together in 2010, which has that system, everyone should have that. That is the one downfall of the series for me is, you made the wrong move 20 minutes ago. You're only realizing it now. You're fucked. It's over.
Fire Emblem introduced a magic rewind button, so I would guess
it's I did not know that.
In Advance Wars. The last couple Fire Emblems finally did that too.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's a great thing to add to a remake. I would worry about adding that to future games because it's just going to make them harder.
Mm-hmm. I guess you're only encouraging them to make them harder. That is it for Advance Wars. I've said my piece. Maybe one day I will come to terms of this game. Maybe I'll even play Reboot Camp and I'll get maybe almost all the way through the tutorial before noping out. But Chris, Henry, final thoughts from you on this before we wrap up?
I hope to play it again, and that a lot of people, the real world conditions don't get in the way again of playing Advance Wars, and that, also let's keep our wars only to a video game. How about that? That's my political position I'll throw out here. But and also though, there are many games like Advance Wars out there. I just named Wargroove and Warbits, which are two. Warbits is a phone game that is very, it doesn't do much new with it, but if you're jonesing for Advance Wars, there's that out there. There's several others like it on the Switch that I'm forgetting of right now. But just look for them out there. They're there. If you got your Wii U still hooked up, absolutely play a Dual Strike. If you're going to just play one of them, I'd just say go straight to Dual Strike. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the easiest one just to, start in, dabble. You can leave before it gets too incredibly complicated. I think it's a real tragedy that, Nintendo's not making more of these because, with a lot of Nintendo games, other people, especially indie developers, love to copy them. But it's such a Herculean task to copy anything Nintendo does because so much what they do is based on, such a refinement. It's not just a simple idea that anyone can implement. You have to do so much work to make it work as well as a Nintendo game works.
Mm-hmm.
And Unfortunately, that means that what we see is a lot of, you know, either people copying it directly or people trying to make their new mechanics, and it doesn't just quite work as well.
Yeah, that is true. Like, Advance Wars, the first one was just building off the legacy of three to five other games, really, for the most part.
Yeah, that's why it just blew everything out of the water at first, because, you know, it had, you know, 10 years of development hidden behind, you know, imports.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So when the first one came out, it blew people away.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Retronauts. This is supported by all of you nice fans out there. If you want to support the show and get all these episodes 1 week at a time and ad-free, please go to patreon.com/retronauts. You can get that at the $3 level, but if you sign up for the $5 level, you'll get access to 2 full-length bonus episodes every month. And we've been doing that since early 2020, so there are over 50 full-length bonus episodes on the Patreon if you have not heard them. And the $5 level also gets you a weekly column and a weekly podcast by Diamond Fight. So a lot of stuff is happening behind that paywall at patreon.com/retronauts. Check it out there if you want to support the show and, you know, get extra stuff on top of that. And, Chris, do you want to be found? Do you want people to find you and ask you Advance Wars questions? If not, that's fine.
No, I don't think I'm going to want people to be found. Instead, I'm gonna pimp something else. We've had a lot of fun talking about wars today. And as we all know, real-life wars suck. But I also just want to remind people that real-life sanctions also suck because they mostly focus on the poor. And they don't really change regimes. They don't hurt the people who are causing the conflict. So just a reminder, be skeptical of that too, because, yeah, what Russia's doing to Ukraine right now really sucks, but what's happened to the Russian people, also not great.
I agree.
Just be skeptical about that.
We gain nothing by stopping Russians from playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah, we gain nothing from me not being able to patron my Russian artist I have following.
It's very, man, it's going to make my ad for Talking Simpsons weak by comparison, but yes, yeah. No, sanctions...
You can change the order.
No. Sanctions are, I've learned this a lot too in the last few years, that yeah, sanctions are presented in American media of just like a neutral thing of like, or like basically, you know, writing a ticket to somebody, like a parking ticket to a nation, but it's like the sanctions in Iran, for example, have killed many people. Like, but hey, that's not so fun to talk about.
I don't want anyone complaining about political messages in a podcast about war.
That's true. Yes.
Number one.
Yeah. About wars that are especially advanced.
Exactly.
There should be a sanctions mode in it. Hey, anyway. you can follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG. And also, of course, you should know that me and Bob host a podcast network of shows, Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon. Check those out wherever you find your podcast. Talking Simpsons, where we chronologically go through every episode of The Simpsons. We're into season 13 right now. What a Cartoon is where we cover an animated series once a month, super in depth. And we have a ton of bonuses on our Patreon, patreon.com/Talking Simpsons. You want to hear me and Bob talk about each month an episode of King of the Hill or Futurama? Well, you'd only hear that if you're a subscriber, patreon.com/Talking Simpsons.
And as for me, you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. But that's it for us this week. We'll see you again soon for another episode of Retronauts. Take care.